Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Getting my dad to say, I love you.
To say what?
Say he loves it.
Outrageous.
Bloody nonsense.
So, welcome to the final episode of the first series of Getting My Dad to Say, I Love You, the podcast where I talk to my friends, colleagues, creators, find out about their parents, and most importantly, try and get them to help my dad say, I love you to me. I've got my very good friends, ex-podcast partner, funny comedian Carl Donnelly in this final episode. Dad, you know Carl Donnelly.
I do, yes. I remember when I first met him in, God, it must go back. I think it was 2006 Edinburgh Festival.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you were staying in a horrible, I think it was an ex-shop, I think. The only advantage of it was relatively central, but it was a pretty grotty. And I'd come up to do the Edinburgh Book Fair.
Yeah.
The house was quite full, and Carl had Mrs. D Mark One with him.
Always good to bring up a guest's divorce pre being a guest on the podcast. But yep, carry on.
Is that a bad thing to do?
Well, I mean, it's fine.
I just said it was Mark.
Yes,
One.
I know. We can move
but,
on.
I mean,
then.
I didn't say, you know. I mean, for all I know, he's gone and got three wives and converted to some curious religious sect that you have particularly prevalent in America.
Yeah. So we've got Carl on.
Yeah.
You know him very well.
Yes. Well, I haven't seen him for a long while. I hope he's well.
He is well. Well, why don't I go and chat to him, see how well he is. Maybe not bring up his previous marriage and see if he's got any good tips for me.
I was putting it in a setting.
Lovely. You were painting a picture.
Well, yes, although I can't, but maybe I should start painting.
Maybe you should.
New thing, I'll start painting.
Yeah,
I'll sit outside the front door with an easel. That would attract lots of attention.
That would. I don't know if it's going to be the right attention, but phenomenal that you've gone to picture painting from me trying to introduce Carl Donnelly. I'm going to chat to Carl, good friend. He's hopefully going to be the final guy that convinces you to say I love you.
Okay, well, he could be a good ingredient in that, as he's a good man, yeah.
Okay, all right, see you in a bit.
Yeah.
Hi, Carl.
Hey, how you doing? You all right?
Good, you sound lovely.
Oh, cool.
How are you doing?
I'm very well.
How are you doing?
Thank you, Chris.
Isn't it funny that I'm interviewing you? I just realised how funny that is.
It's so weird.
Interviewing one of my best friends is such a...
When me and Hannah did our little sort of weird pregnancy podcast, we interviewed friends about their pregnancies, and it's a weird thing to attempt, isn't it? To sort of... You've got to sound a bit formal now and again.
I know. It feels like I should... I should have a clipboard, and at the end of it, I should tell you if you've done a good job recently on these. I've been Zooming with some friends, and we've been talking about how essentially, this isn't everyone, and I don't know if this is probably not you at all, essentially doing everything in my life to prove to my my parents that I'm not a failure. Do you never, right. Like, not in a, I am. I'm not. This is not trying to be like super. But I just think it's. I think it's fascinating how. But even not. I never even thought that until I did a commercial out here, and it's just a commercial and whatever UK. You know, no one wants to do commercials out here. It's kind of a step on the acting scale and all
this. Yeah. It's a credit, mate.
I sent my mum a thing of me doing this commercial, which was like a national one, so it's quite well paid. And I sent her it, and all she said was, "Whose idea was it to wear the hat?"
Oh man, like,
obviously, I love obviously. It. But it's funny because I've never realised that. But that's just like, I know your family is very Irish, and my mum is actually brought up Irish. My dad hates talking about love and sort of anything intimate like that. But he's very nice and clearly is sort of happy with what I'm doing. But this is something very fascinating to me about how ultimately underneath all of this sort of veneer of stuff, I always find there's like a little bit of a, you want to do well to sort of, I don't know, I'd love to be in a place where I'm like, you know, see what happens. Do you never have like, if you have I don't know, it's weird because it's a subconscious versus conscious thing. I never think I'm like after a gig, my mum thinks I'm a failure. But do you not like, do you never get like overrun by like, if you have a bad gig, do you never fucking go like, I need to go back, I need to fucking write this shit out and make it better? And then whether that's, I don't think that's necessarily, it might be affected by your parents or anything. You never get that at all.
I don't think I need to write it out or like, none of it is related to anyone else. Like, you know, my parents we've talked about this in private and, you know, you've seen me talk about it on stage enough where my parents are notoriously not unsupportive. That's the wrong word. Like, they're very proud of me, but they're proud of me sort of because they're proper like working class Irish people who they don't understand how I make a living, you know what I mean? They just can't believe I fly different parts of the world and do jokes and I get paid for it. To them, that is the most alien concept. So they're proud of me, but they don't understand it.
Have they ever shown any interest in it. Have they ever said, I'm proud of you?
No, of course not.
Do you know what's funny?
Do you know what? I don't know if that is. Maybe I'm a bit... That's a bit harsh. I reckon they might have, but not in a... Not in that sort of, you know, film sense where they go, I'm proud of you, son. I reckon in a very offhand, like my dad, the first time my dad ever said like he loved me was in such an offhand manner. Like, and I reckon it was genuinely in the last decade. My dad's 81 years old now. And I've never heard that man utter the word love, right? He's just not that cut from that sort of cloth. And then I remember it about, probably, yeah, 7 or 8 years ago, probably. He was, you know, he was old enough that I genuinely think he just realised that, I need to say this now because I might die.
Yeah. It's the end of the movie. The end of the movie and I've got to get it out.
Yeah. And he said it like at the end of a phone call or something. We were just having a normal catch-up, like very, I don't know. I mean, I don't do Skypes or anything really with my family, but, you know, my phone calls are, I could have not spoken to him in 2-3 months. I can be in Australia. And I'll call him and I'll say, hi, Dad, it's Carl. And he'll be like, oh, hello. And we'll have a little chat. And literally 2-3 minutes of updates. And then he'll go, right, I'll put your mother on. And then it's my mum. And it's same chat, updates. Yeah. All right, well, we'll speak to you soon. And I remember my dad just threw in a, like, I love you. I love you. And I was like, what the fuck? And he just said it and then passed the phone over to my mum. As if, like, you can just drop that for the first time in your son's life when he's in his 30s and then just pass you on to your mum to go, hello.
That is such a dad way of doing it. Because he was obviously, maybe consciously, subconsciously, he was a bit scared. He obviously was like, maybe I've got to do this, but I'm done. And if he does it and hands it over, then he doesn't have to deal with the consequences of you either saying it. Have you ever said it to him?
But never like until that moment, until he started saying it, it took me, this sounds just like, obviously, well, I'm part of the problem. I reckon I didn't say it back for ages. Like, it took me a couple of years because I was still a bit uncertain. He wouldn't do it all the time, but especially now, you know, now we've got a baby, he's broadened it out to lots of love to the little one and all that. You know, he chucks it, everyone gets one now. But it took me a few. I'll then go lots of that. Yeah, we now say it back to each other.
He started dishing them out now. He started dishing them out.
Can't stop, mate.
It's like a fruit machine. Once you get one win on it, it starts fucking chucking out pound coins. That's so funny. But do you know what's funny as well? Because I also, maybe this is why we're friends, and there's lots of reasons, but I think there's a funny connection there. It's like, I realised I haven't, there's something as well different, I think, about saying love you to literally I love you is definitely such a lots of love. Anyone, I've said that to my mum all the time. She says it back, but saying
that isn't lots of love isn't like declaring your love for somebody.
Or even just even love you. If you don't put that I, something about hitting I, it's so very American. If it was very American, we're in a movie, I love you. I remember I said when I was in Vegas for Christmas a few years back, I don't know if she was pissed off at me because I was in Vegas, but it was my mum. So, you know, like this weird thing, like Irish Catholic brought up, was like, rather than be like, I'd wish you were here and I love you and I wish you were here, she kind of was just a bit cold.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, why are you in Las Vegas at Christmas, you fucking heathen? But she, I said, love you, mum. And she went, oh, thanks. And I was just like, fuck you, Kathy.
Thanks. That is so harsh.
Come here, son.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction and free shipping. And that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Were you brought up with like any kind of work ethic stuff instilled in you by your mum or dad or not?
Absolutely not. I mean, I reckon it couldn't be further from that. Like, this is genuinely, like, my brother's 7 years older than me. He got the lion's share of like their sort of, and he got, this sounds like harsh. It sounds like I'm dealing with some sort of like residual sort of dislike of like what I missed out on. But my parents had a little golden period where my dad was actually making all right money and my mum was working, and like they were still living in the little flat that we grew up in, but it was, you know, it was sort of, they're fine. And my brother, like, they took my brother to Disney World in Florida. At first, like, it was like their biggest overseas holiday ever. By the time I came along, 7 years later, things had got a bit shit and my dad wasn't earning much and my mum was sort of in between jobs. And like, so I got the tough years when life was hard for them. And I think they just
Disneyland for Carl.
But they also just, life was harder. So they naturally were a bit more stressed. So I didn't get as much of the, you know, because I could tell it. I remember my brother and my mum were really tight. When my brother was in his teens, I remember being like 6 or 7 or 8 and seeing how close they were. Like there was a real like fondness and kindness between them. But I just never felt, I always felt a little bit like I'd showed up and ruined everything, or was late to the party and sort of missed out on, you know, you get to the party when it's 1 a.m. and everyone's winding it down. I showed up like that when it was just like, ah, fuck. So like, I basically always felt like I was on my own in the family, which is good in the sense of it gave me a sense of independence. And because financially things were a bit tough, and also academically, there was nothing. Like, my parents don't have any academia in them. My brother failed everything at school. We ended up doing he went to college and like dropped out, and then he ended up just working in like bad, low paid jobs. Now he's all right. He's a car salesman. But I didn't have anyone to aspire to in terms of jobs, academic, endeavors or anything. So I always sort of just thought, all right, I'm going it alone. And I actually think I developed a sense of independence to go like, I'm not going to do any of these crap jobs that you lot are doing. I'm going to go out and find something that I want to do. So it was more to not be like them rather than to impress them or do anything else. It was more that I'm not going to have this life.
But that still means they...
Like, they're involved in that way, decision, yeah, yeah.
There's definitely like, that's what I summon. Well, I feel like they were involved. They didn't know it, but they were involved. I think that's common as well. Like, I feel like with my... not that this is therapy for me, but like, my dad, there's definitely some stuff that I realized by osmosis I gathered, but also looked at some shit he did. I was like, I don't want to be that guy, drink driving a car into another car than spending the night in the woods. My mum calls me going, can you have a word with your dad? And I'm like, I'm 18. I'm supposed to be the reckless one.
That's where we've got similarities there, actually, that my dad was, until he became old enough that he couldn't do it anymore, my dad was a liability, essentially. He just was so irresponsible. Like, the amount of time, I remember being 15 and having like a weekend job, and I worked like three, I was working like a couple of evenings as well. It was pretty sure it was illegal. I wasn't allowed to work, but so I had like a decent income for a 15 year old. I was like, you know, probably in the top 1% of income. But
you peaked at 15, but you're like one of those football players, mate. You were the captain of the under 15s, and then it just went to shit when everyone else grew up and got bigger than you.
But my dad would, like, he'd get a parking ticket once a bloody week or a speeding fine, and it would come through the door, and he'd get it before my mum saw it. And he would come to me and be like, can you help me? I've got to pay this without your mum now. So I can't use the card. So I'd be 15 and paying my dad's fines. And he'd always be like, I'll pay you back. And he'd never paid me back. So I basically was like, I felt like I was ultimately the responsible adult in the house from about the age of 13.
That's funny. I relate so hard to that, because in a different way, I don't know about that. Isn't that a weird, I don't know if anyone else's parents, my dad, the amount of times he used to do shit to me, and it was like, it was also like dad like had me so he could get like a mate for like from the age of 14.
to cover just, for him.
Yeah, he'd just be, just get an alibi. He just goes, honestly, this was that phrase I heard more than anything else when I was a teenager. Whatever you do, don't you dare tell your mother. That's what he said all the time. About like
100%.
All shit. And I was just like, you just go like, what the fuck? So must be interesting to see how many comedians especially have that, because I agree, it like makes you, it might not influence you as you think positively, but I guess it teaches you to like, I've like not be, not a fuck up's a harsh word, but not be a bloke that is relying on his kid.
Don't be self-reliant. That's what I learned from my parents more than anything. And ultimately, I've almost got to look at it in a way that I thank them for it, because I don't know if I don't think they did it intentionally. My dad definitely didn't do it intentionally. He was just a fucking idiot. But he's a love. My dad's very funny though.
He was accidentally a good dad. Like,
yeah,
he accidentally did some good parenting.
He's funny. He's really sarcastic. He's a very nice, gentle man. But yeah, because he's a bit of a fuck up, I just genuinely, the things I took from him probably are sense of humour and things like that, that were very important. But yeah, the other things I took were not to live your life in that manner, not to sort of be so, there was never any planning for the future with my dad. It was always just about keeping the walls from the door. But actually, he could have easily planned for the future. I mean, like, because they live in a flat which was privately rented, but then for on and off long periods they'd be on housing benefits, but when my dad was that golden period I mentioned, when my brother was young, they got offered that right to buy thing, you know, that Thatcher brought it in whatever in the late 70s. They could have bought the flat for something like 20,000 English pounds, and my mum to this day reckons my dad could quite comfortably have got a mortgage. He was a carpenter at the time. He had a stable job. And apparently my dad was just like, oh, what's the point of that? Like, well, you know, I don't really understand. Like, you know, sign up to a 25-year mortgage. And basically they're now still living in that flat, and it's fully paid for by the, you know, the government pay their rent and all that. But it would be worth £500,000 minimum. It's a little flat, but it's in Tooting, which became super gentrified. So they're sitting on over a £500,000 property that my dad could have bought for £20,000 30 years ago, and he just didn't because he thought the paperwork would be too much hassle.
That's so funny that I was going to say, is that what it is? And I actually really relate to your dad there when certain things. Hannah's like, "Can we do this?" I'm like, "Oh God, it's just like this. What is there to test you? The paper." Yeah. But now, are you really good at paperwork? Has he like passed that on to you because that's a lesson
I'm
you learned?
Great. I'm still a bit. You know, I still carry the odds. I'm not the best at organizing my finances, but what I was clever enough to do was, because not that I make loads of money or anything, but I knew my limitations with finances, so I paid a man as financial advisor to set up savings accounts where money just goes out of my account into them, and I've got to message him to get the money.
Have you not thought about doing what your dad did and just sort of waiting until Twyla's a bit older and then you just borrow it off her
when she's got a paper round? Yeah, so like it's that thing of I learned to work with my limitations, whereas my dad just always just let them be. And just it was always the amount of times when I was young when bailiffs would knock because my dad had hidden a parking fine or something. Just basically it came. He didn't want my mum to see it. I was too young and I wasn't working yet because I was 12. So he just like, what he'd do is just throw it in the bin and hope it just goes away. And then flash forward 3 months, there'd be bailiffs banging at the door to try and take the telly. And my dad would just be like, my mum would be shouting at my dad, what's going on? He'd be like, oh, I forgot to pay. It's like, you fucking donuts.
And you had to, what did you think had to keep your happened? Mouth shut. You had to keep your mouth shut.
I said I'd never be that person.
That's funny. So do you think, well, that you haven't been that person, I guess, in what you do with your career and stuff. But like, that's so interesting, though. I find it very fascinating how certain people are like, their dad or their mum, and often if it's guys, I guess it's the dad, it's like they're pushing what they want into them and they try and live up to it and they fail. But like, yeah, that's funny. I think we're cut from that same cloth of like seeing what the dad's done and going, okay, that's interesting. It's like being a comedian, isn't it? That joke didn't work, so I will change that.
Yeah.
And I'll do a completely different joke. But that's so interesting the fact that our dads don't like saying I love you, but they're better versions of their dads, which is funny.
Definitely. My dad doesn't talk much about his dad. I never met him because he died before I was born, but I reckon he was a pretty hard, he's from like a rough little part of Western Ireland. And, you know, I don't think he was an easy man to, you know, and my mum's side, you know, her mum was really like, hard going on them, and like, you know, I've heard stories about their childhood that makes me just wince.
That's why they were so hands off with you, because they were I don't want to be up in Carl's grill, so I'll take a step back. And then you were probably in between the two, might have been,
you know, show some balance. Interest in my academic, you know. I didn't show up to one, like, sort of, you know, some exams and stuff. And they didn't even know I had them. They didn't know what days I had my GCSEs or anything. I just go to school and come back. They never asked where I even went. They said, bug my hoods.
Am I right in saying did you fail some exams?
GCSEs, I actually end up doing all right, purely through sort of, you know, doing the bare minimum. I was not the most academic, but I was clever enough to manage to, I was good at exams, actually, weirdly. I was one of them people that wouldn't do any work for 2 years, but then 2 days before I'd be like, right, let's see what this is all about and read it and just memorize it and then go and just get a decent mark.
What's this geography about then?
All right.
Addis Ababa. Okay. Yeah.
Cumulonimbus clouds. All right.
Yeah. All right. Did you fucking Oxbow Lakes all over that? Was it A levels or A levels you failed or something? Didn't you not turn up to an exam?
I didn't turn up to my ancient history A level because I just woke up late, got on the bus, realised I was going to miss the start. And thought, I've not really done the work for this. Let's just allow it. So I went and sat in a coffee shop and waited for my mates to be finished their A-level and then just texted and said, come and meet me.
Did your parents find out about that?
No. Well, they probably, I don't know if they didn't know what A-levels are, so.
It's like, you know, it's some fine. Some kids are listening to this are like, God, I wish my parents didn't know, have any class. But
it's a middle ground again, isn't it? Like, I'm not saying I've got, I had friends whose parents were so breathing down their necks and putting pressure on them that actually my mates, they didn't enjoy school because they felt like it was, you know, that it wasn't just them trying to get grades. It was them trying to impress their parents and do what their parents wanted and go into the career they wanted. Like, ultimately, some of them ended up super successful. Like my mate, Sam, his family, yeah, he's from a Chinese family. And, you know, they were full on, you know, you've got to work hard because they'd come from China and then they set up a little like fish and chip shop in Morden and they'd worked hard to have their business and they wanted the best for Sam. So they pushed him so hard. He ended up, you know, being the head boy of the school and he ended up going to Oxford and now he's literally like a partner at PwC. He's just a millionaire. So obviously financially worked out for them and him. So, but you know, that feels like a bit extreme for me, but I would have liked, you know, it would have been nice in hindsight maybe to have some, you know, it wouldn't, for them to come in now and again and say, have you done your homework? Might have been nice.
That would have been nice. So now that they're older and your dad said, love you. And as your mum said, I love you to you before.
Yeah, she's, my mum was somebody who was always, it was very mood dependent because she's had a lot of issues in her life with her mental health. Same as my mum.
Okay,
yeah. And there's been periods where you couldn't expect that of her just because she wasn't in the right headspace. But there's periods like, you know, also, my parents were very party people as well for a lot of my life. You know, when they were sort of, they would be out at the weekend getting, and like when they were drunk, they were the most loving people on earth because when you're drunk, yeah, you love everyone, right? So I'd be showered with love when they were pissed. But, you know, the moment they'd wake up, it'd be like back to normal. But so like my mum was very much one of them who, she'd have a few wines in her and she'd be grabbing me and telling me she loved me and that. But yeah, but you know, sober, I don't think she was madly.
What do you think would happen? What do you think would happen right now? I was thinking about this. I know, what time is it? You're in Australia. It's, what time is it? 4:15 in the UK. So they're not awake. What would happen theoretically if you just texted your do they even have a mobile phone, your parents?
My mum doesn't. My dad does. Not very. He can't do texts though, but he can read them.
What would happen if you just texted him out of the blue, I love you, on a text?
I genuinely think
now he
would be like, well, that's nice. You know what I mean? He'd probably, I don't think, he couldn't reply, but he probably would call me back and say like, he probably asked me if I was all right first, actually. He'd call me and say, is everything all right? Which I think is the, you know, because it would be out of character. But I do think, like, if up until 10 years ago, though, that would have been, he would have genuinely called me and gone like, what are you talking about? Well, you know, that would have been, I remember chatting about this. I don't know if I told you about how I once went to see, and we can, it's not, this isn't a criticism or anything. It's actually quite, but there's a comedian called Jason Cook in the UK. You know him. Jason did a really like sort of lovely show about his dad. His dad had a stroke and then I think sadly later down the line died. But like before that, like when his dad had a stroke, Jason did this show where the end of the show was very sad and like it was all about how much he loved his dad essentially and how, you know, how easy it is to lose your parents, whatever. And he said, you know, so after this show, you know, just go out there, call your dad and tell him you love him. And obviously most of the crowd are crying and stuff like that. But I was sitting next to Jim Jefferies. Me and Jim had gone to see the show together. And both of us sort of giggled to ourselves, obviously because we've got similar family experiences. And we walked out after the show and turned to each other and you know, and just went, if I called my dad now and said, I love you, my dad would be like, what's wrong with you? What's happened? Have you got a disease or something? It was such an alien concept for us.
That's what's interesting to me with like, your dad does actually, in a good way, I think, he doesn't really not take an interest, but he doesn't care too much about your work, which actually is good, because my dad's way of, I've realized, is showing love is like he hates talking about anything to do with love or kissing or anything. as in, like, once I found out, I told you when I found out that when he was dating my mum, He was seeing another woman, and my mum said, "You have to break up with this other woman if you want to go out." Yeah. He went, "Okay," and then he didn't do that because it was too awkward for him. So he just kept dating another woman, and I was like, "Oh, Dad, that's funny. Tell me about it." He was just like, But his way of showing love in that very like masculine kind of slightly generational way is just, it's always about work or money or anything, which I don't think he means it to be like. I guess in one way it's good, like it makes you feel like, oh, I should, you know, having a decent work ethic. But I think subconsciously I'm like, every day I need to be working and doing and having stuff. It's that weird thing, even like you talked about, like having something to talk to your parents, give them some news. Because if you just didn't do anything and we're not like loving people, we're not going to talk, I mean, what are we talking about? The royal family that my mum...
Well, one thing I will say... And this is sort of a defence of that style of parenting they've gone for, mine and your parents probably, like that sort of slightly standoffish parenting where, you know, you don't sort of, you're not giving of everything. There's not much to give back. Like, they don't expect anything. My parents don't expect anything from me, really. Like, I get a call now and again when my dad's phone's playing up or, you know, they need some admin sorted. But, like, I've got friends who are from really close families. My mate Nick's from an Italian family. And literally, throughout our lives, like every, it would be like somebody's 21st birthday and they'd be having a party. And everyone would text round, right, this is the plan. We're going da, 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 da. And Nick would always be like, oh, I've got a family dinner. Like he always had to go to family events. Like family was treated as more important than your friends. Whereas for me, and I think you're similar, my family has never, like my family could be having something so important. Like there's been funerals, like my grandparents' funerals and stuff, where my mum's been like, oh, you sure, you don't have to come if you don't want to. Like, it's like so laid back.
That's true.
That actually, I never feel like they've put pressure on me to do anything. So actually, everything I do for them, I do it out of not duty. I don't feel like I have to do it. I'm doing it because I want to do it for them. There's no sense of like, oh, fucking, here we go. I've got a
that's
bloody...
That's a good point. I'm not actually thinking about that. That's quite nice. It's like, this is a nice thing and they will like it, but also... If I don't, they're not gonna. It's not gonna ruin their life.
Have we ever talked about buying presents for family? Because that is one of the funniest. Like my mum, I get my mum perfume or flowers, and she loves it. Like she thinks, oh, it's because it's quite a romantic-y scent. My dad's so unromantic and so shit. I don't think he's ever bought her a present. That
does
for
your
my mum,
has your dad ever like my dad called you and gone, what should I get for your mother, and then made you get it for him?
I would normally just get it. I wouldn't even give him the option. I'd just say, right, I'll go and get mum's present for you. I'll wrap it and I'll write it. You don't even have to be involved.
And
mate,
you are a good present giver because your dad is a shit present giver.
Yeah, totally. I learned from from how not to do it.
I feel
it.
Like the lesson I'm taking from this is like, if your dad's shit at stuff, you're going to be good at it. So to be a good parent, you should just be awful. Not awful,
but I used to buy my dad, like this is 100% rate of like Christmases and birthdays. It would be an aftershave. That would be either be Christmas or birthday. And if I didn't, whatever I didn't get him for Christmas or birthday, the other one, I would get him a nice shirt tie combination. That was it, right? That is every present I ever bought my dad. When I was about 15 or 16, for some reason I thought, "I'm done. Why do I have to buy him the same things? Can't he just have something different for once?" And I bought him a Dean Martin CD. And on my life, he looked at it like I'd wrapped a shit up and just given it to him.
Why Dean Martin?
Just because, I don't know, I thought it'd be a nice sort of...
Does he like Dean Martin?
Well, this is the thing about my dad, he's got no hobbies or interests. But I thought, I was like, everyone from that generation likes Frank Sinatra, Dean Martin, all those guys. I just thought, I'll get him a nice Dean Martin compilation, he can put it on in the car while he's driving, and he'll have sort of, that's amore. So I gave it to him, and on my life, he sort of looked at it like... What's this? And I said, it's a Dean Martin CD you can listen to in the car. I'm 100% confident that never even got put in the car, mate. That went in the bin. I've told you about my mum putting stuff in the bin, haven't I?
That followed the parking tickets, mate.
What's the one? I've told you about the time. I can't remember what the present was now. Like I saw a present I gave to my mum in the bin.
Wasn't it like a smelly something that smelt? And she said
it was probably something like a bath set or something. No, it was an incense holder. that I bought her with some incense, and I went around about a month later and couldn't see it. I was like, "Where's that incense holder that I bought you for?" One of her birthday presents, and she just openly went, "Oh yeah, I put that in the bin." And I was like, "What?" She went, "I put it in the bin. I didn't like the smell." I was like, "You didn't have to throw it away. You could have bloody given it to someone else. Just in the bin."
I like brutal. That. It's just that she's just like, there's no point. No one at a charity shop would even want this. There's no. Do you know what? I'm saving other people from the misery of this. I'm going to bin it. That's so funny. My dad actually was, it's that weird thing of, it's so funny because your dad obviously like really just liked the shirt and tie. And yeah. he probably wanted to be like, this is great, keep it coming, but didn't. Like my dad used to always say the thing, what do you want for Christmas, Dad? He'd go, don't get me anything. I don't want anything. Said it every time. Then one year, I think it was his birthday, so me and my mum and my sister, so we didn't get anything. And he was like, really? He looked like your mum probably would have looked the moment she set a light to that incense. He looked mortified. And then we was like, it's a fake out, we've got it. And I was like, just so funny, just express yourself. You
be honest, presents. Mate.
Be honest, you silly old fucker. But men with love. Oh, here's a couple more things I wanted to ask you. Here's something I only clocked the other day. I had a weird moment. I don't know, it's because it's pandemic. It's been a year indoors and you start overthinking everything. But I remembered my friend Tom, who you know, who's a chef. He's my oldest friend. And I remember, did you ever, and I know you used to hang out with friends from a young age, did you have someone, like a family? Did you have like a second family? I haven't done it yet. And I don't know why I'm scared to do it because I feel like it might come out of nowhere. But I really want to email his mum and dad and just go, thank you for like being my other parent. That sounds weird.
I'm in
lockdown for you. Because I realised that when I went to his, they were very openly lovey-dovey. And I rung him the other day and I was like, mate, I just realised like your mum and dad, they were so nice to me. And like, you guys all loved each other. And your mum probably even said, I love you. My mum probably didn't. My mum was going through some stuff and my dad was always away or drinking or whatever. And they were so openly lovey and all that. And then he went, mate, what are you talking about? I used to love going to your mum and dad's. I could swear. And I was like,
Is that what,
do you reckon that's everyone? Like whatever.
I definitely think you've got favourite friends' parents, but not for different reasons. Like, because a lot of my mates growing up were second generation Irish as well. Like all our families were relatively similar, but some of them were a bit stricter than others. Like my house was sort of nicknamed the Doss House because it was the one where it was almost like the sort of embassy you could come to if you messed up. Do you know what I mean? Like even from the age of like 15 or 16, if we went out drinking and somebody got a bit too pissed, they would always stay at mine because my parents were just properly like, this will never leave this house. Like, because my parents were a bit pissed, you know, a bit wild themselves. Like, you could just literally, I could drag a mate in just totally out of it and he'd just crash in my room. And yeah, my parents would be totally cool for him to say, I stayed at Carl's and his parents like made me breakfast and stuff in the morning, like, as if nothing happened. They were really like, it became quite a good thing. Like, during a period, like where my mate Garrett, his parents were real strict Catholic Irish. The rule was every Sunday he had to go to mass, but he was allowed to go on his own. He didn't have to sit with him. He could just go and sit in the back. But he just started, he'd skip mass, go walk past the church, come to my house and sit there for an hour. And my parents would just never say a word that he was there instead of mass. So cool. My house was like the sort of the go-to one that friends were like, this is the best place because there's no rules. But I didn't really, I had friends who, I got on with everyone's parents, but there was no house where I was like, I'd go to for actual family stuff. Also, some of my friends had messed up sort of, their parents had split up and things like that. So like, I think I was always very happy at home because my parents genuinely let me just do what the fuck I want. Like, and some of it was like, we won't ask if you don't tell us. So like, I used to smoke out my window at home when I was like 15.
And that obviously would be able to smell that.
Of course, but like, I mean, they smoked at the time, so the house, you know, would have noticed.
house, if you walk past your house, it's just like three different windows of different like generations smoking.
Just loads of Turkish geezers sitting inside, just puffing.
got loads of cab drivers just sitting outside, having a coffee.
Watching an illegal stream of football.
No wonder your mates love going around yours. Yeah, of course.
Yeah, my mate Garrett, he'd literally come round at 6 p.m. every Sunday, skip mass, and we'd sit in my room, just open the window and just have a couple of fags. Like, it's the most... Looking back, it was pretty degenerate at times, but my parents were so chilled with me drinking, as long as I... You know, it was that thing of they trusted me, knowing that I had a... They trusted that I would... always come home safely because they knew it. I wouldn't get in trouble. I wouldn't go out and end up passing out in a park or anything. They just let me, they were like, look, you can do this. Just come back safely. And actually it ended up being quite a good deal.
Well, before we wrap up then, this is obviously going to be guest dependent, but you have a young child and you had your parents with their unique style of parenting, we'll call it. What do you want to do? Slightly different and maybe take a leaf out of their book and pass on
I think it's that middle ground thing. I genuinely think, like, I'm hyper aware to not flip so far the other way. I don't want to be an overbearing parent who expects a lot from my child. One thing I've learned from my parents is actually there is a real benefit to giving them their own space, letting them be who they want to be.
You're like the Arsene Wenger. They're like the Arsene Wengers of parenting. You just let people express themselves.
Yeah. But also take an interest as well. Because that's one thing, my parents never took an interest in anything I did. Yeah. So, you know, ultimately, even though it's ended up making me go and always try and be my own person, it would have been nice, I think, to have some form of interest. So I think I'm just going to, I think it's really seeped in and I'm going to be, you know, always aware that don't go over the top, but also don't just kick back and be like, oh, where are they? I've not seen them in 3 days, like, which is often something I would do. When I was like 13, like, I went through a period where I would just go down to my mates in Croydon for weekends. I'd finish school, come home, pack a bag, and I'd go there. I'd come back Sunday evening. Like, my parents were just cool with that. They didn't know where I was, what I was doing. I'm just off for the weekend. And they trusted me. And I was, you know, I was smoking weed and getting up to some naughtiness, but nothing major bad. But I do look back and think, you know, I think that is a bit
give
much.
A little bit of a shit.
Yeah, and this was pre-mobile phones as well. So I was literally gone. There was no contact for 3 days, whatever, 2 days.
Imagine if you'd actually gone missing. They go to the police station. When did he go missing? Obviously, they have to be gone for at least 24 hours. Ago. He actually went away last March was the last time we saw him.
Yeah.
It's almost
said
been
he was going away
year.
For a weekend. What do you mean going away for a weekend? He's 13. Yeah, he just goes away for weekends. What can we, you know, he's had a tough week.
He commutes to school.
This is his London home. He actually spends the rest his weekends in his country house.
He's in Milton Keynes on the weekends. Before we wrap up, Carl, do you want to hear? I think I showed you, but I just want to just play this to listeners as well. This is my dad, and as I said, my mum. They both have different ways of showing it, but do you want to hear me trying to get my dad to say I love you? Because he does. What's funny is my dad does love me, and he's very loving in how proud he is and all that. And it's interesting that you said, like, your parents are kind of proud. I think you can show pride in a few more ways, but it is that funny thing of, and I just, anyone listening, if they have a parents that are awkward expressing themselves and they feel like they're doing a lot of stuff to make them love, just listen to what happened when I tried to get my dad to say I love you.
Well, yeah, but why are you doing this sort of shit? I mean, I think
just why are we doing this
why
shit?
Are you doing this sort of shit?
for a podcast by accident, that wasn't why I was doing it, but I did actually start recording Zooms with my parents quite morbidly in case they die, and I wanted some video evidence because I just realised, sounds morbid, I realised we don't have, there's families at video and we don't have any, like we said, we're not super, everyone has this weird, it's like a collection of people that live together who like and love each other, but we don't video shit. And I was like, oh, it would be good to have some video evidence. So just a little thing, as you've got a kid yourself, Carl, I'd say this early, do some form of video. I'm sure there's loads of videos going on with the baby, but
we're quite good for photos and videos. I'm not one of them obsessive parents that films loads, but like I've got
too many.
My childhood is semi undocumented. Like there's photos of me when I was a baby, and then there's probably one at every 5 year interval until I'm 50. there's no evidence of what happened in that time. My parents just weren't phototypes.
They were mainly taken by a man in Croydon who used to live with
Or the school school photos were the only evidence that I had a childhood, essentially.
That's so true. I'm the same. There's a couple of me as a baby. There's one of me as about... And they're right, they're just school... They were like...
There's always just one of you with your dick out when you're a baby in a back garden. And then it's flash forward, you're 15 and you're at school. It's like, oh, cool. That was my childhood, was it?
You're in a photo with 100 other boys and that's it. That's it. That's it. Whereas now, it's just going to be sifting through 58 photos of the same angle of the same kid.
That are all interspersed with loads of horrific WhatsApp photos you've got sent. it's brutal.
It's funny because I feel like you're going to be one of the most well-balanced people I talk to on this who actually is quite good at his motivations and why he's doing it and isn't. But I want to say to everyone on this at the end, I'm proud of you. I'm proud of you, Carl.
Cheers, mate. Thanks. But one thing I will say, just as an aside, I definitely did used to have some resentment about my parents until about 7 or 8 years ago. I think it was one of them things where I was like, oh, it's cool, man. They let me be my own person. But then as I got into my early 30s and went through a divorce and I had some time to really contemplate my life, it did all dawn on me that I was carrying some resentment towards my parents for, at the time I thought, making me the person I am, and I was looking at my flaws and thinking these are their fault. And then what actually happened was I did some therapy and I did some other things, like, you know, some hippie shit like ayahuasca and stuff. Mm-hmm. And all of that, thrown it to one side, I think it was probably just a period of time I had to go through to work it out. I realized that my parents had a lot of stuff on their plate probably, and they've got some history themselves that they've probably never dealt with. And they were just who they were. And ultimately, once I let all that go, I could look at them and be much more lighthearted and be like, oh, they're just a bit of fun, aren't they? They did their best at times.
That's healthy. I think when we get that age or that point in our life where we, you know, there's definitely stuff I wish my parents had done differently. But then you can also just go, they're just like, none of us know what we're doing. Like, at the end
absolutely.
Of the day.
Absolutely. And what's worse, like, accepting that your parents were just maybe sometimes a bit shit, and then getting on with your life without resenting them or holding on to that. That's such a bad thing to hold on to, like this like weight of thinking your parents ruined you. It's like fucking, that's bad enough do you not think your parents have probably got some, secretly probably got some questions about how they did it? They might be thinking, oh, I wish we'd done this, I wish we'd done that. Let them think that. You just get on with your life and just let them be.
That's it, mate. That's it. I feel like you've sort of, come up with the answer for this podcast on the there's nowhere to go, it was a one and done series guys
someone
comes on and starts going, oh, I've got all it. I go, hang on, let me just play you this 2-minute summary from Carl Donnelly about how your parents did their best and actually you can forge your own direction in life. And then I go, oh yeah, that will save me hundreds if not thousands of pounds of therapy. But thanks for doing it, mate. It's nice to chat to you in a formal
It is. It's also nice to chat about some, you know, personal things.
But thanks, mate. Where can people find you online?
Online. Just Twitter and Instagram, I suppose, isn't it? At Carl Donnelly. They can find me. I do some silly tweets. I do some dumb Instagrams. Do some podcasts. But all the info's on there.
Hi, John. I sounded like a guy from Commando there. Hey, John. Dance like no one's watching. Shut your eyes. Bloody go for it, John. Hey, yeah, you can do it, mate. Go on. For it.
All right, Dad, that was Carl Donnelly with, I thought, very good advice. Dance like no one's watching.
Well, I was a bit confused about his advice. I thought he wanted me to go Commando. I wasn't so keen on that.
No, he's referencing the movie Commando with Arnold Schwarzenegger, where he basically overthrows an island of baddies on his own with the help of a lady. There's a female love interest in the movie. I forget her name.
Well, Mr. Schwarzenegger is quite good at that sort of thing.
He's quite good at that sort. He's very good at beating up lots of people almost on his own. Yeah. So he said, he just referenced that movie because he said his name like John Matrix is said by Bennett, the character. It was very convoluted. What the point was, he was saying, say I love you like no one's watching. So maybe with your eyes closed or something like that. How does that sound as an idea?
Well, I could try it.
All right. Okay, you're going to try it? You're actually going to try it? All right, let's see it. Okay, I think he's going to say it. Final episode. All right, let's hear it. Dad, what happened there? You just closed your eyes and then it looked like you mouthed something, but I didn't hear anything. Why is that?
Because I went on mute.
Why did you go on mute?
Because I didn't want you to hear it.
Unbelievable. All right, so you wanted to say I love you like no one could hear you. Is that where you took that advice from it? Unbelievable arsehole.
Well, it was a strange piece of advice, but I think it probably worked because otherwise you can't do another set with this unless if I've broken the rule book.
So you think if you say I love you out loud to me and I hear it, then I'll stop doing this series and we won't get to hang out anymore.
Yeah.
Okay. I guess that's true. You know what, Dad? I've grown a lot this series as well. And I think maybe, you know, I should just know that you love me and I shouldn't be so obsessed with you saying it.
Yes, it was interesting talking to all your friends.
You know what I wanted was you to say I love you. But what I've really gained from this podcast is growing closer to you as a person. And that's the win I didn't think I wanted, but turns out I did want. Does that make sense?
Yes, that's interesting. Yeah.
It's been fun.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
A podcast from producer Paul.co.uk.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.